Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am joined by Maddie Rotman, the head of sustainability for Imperfect Foods. And to say I'm excited is an understatement because I'm a massive fan and subscriber. And when people think brands that are doing the most when it comes to food waste and blemished produce, I mean, Imperfect Foods really is the one that comes to mind in the conversation. So Maddie, thank you so much for being here.
Amy, thank you so much for having me. This is going to be fun.
So as the head of sustainability, which is literally the core of Imperfect Foods, I'm curious, walk me through your professional background a little bit. And what do you think sparked your passion for environmental sustainability?
That's a fun one. My background is really in food and food systems. So I come from this from a love of eating, of growing food, of sort of respecting the land. And I started in college working for a food hub or a food CSA program. And after that, went to work for an online e-commerce grocer in the Northeast before coming to Imperfect. So my background is really about how can we sort of grow food, produce food, and deliver food to sort of end consumers as best as possible. And along this journey of sort of learning and working and talking with farmers and customers and sort of retailers across the country, I realized that food is the core of everything for me. It's sort of where we all meet for what I think are the best conversations, whether it's with my family or friends, but it's a necessary act that we all eat, you know, multiple times a day and can be this huge crux for change. So when you asked, like, how did I get to environmental sustainability? I got to food first and then realized that it's really a crux for change and realized that, you know, through this process, I have found that, you know, 35% of food that we grow in the U.S. doesn't get consumed. And if we were to line up emissions by country, and if food waste was its own country, it's third. So it's China, it's the U.S., and then food waste. So when we think about how do we make environmental change, I realize that the thing I care most about, which is food, actually has the biggest opportunity to make a difference in our environmental course or journey for people and our planet. And it really all starts with what we grow and how we eat it.
So the company aligns, you know, perfectly with a lot of what you're interested in. And it seems like a really fun and unique role. I mean, walk me through, what's the company mission?
Yeah. So Imperfect Foods started in 2015 as Imperfect Produce and started working with growers and farmers and producers, really figuring out what are these too small, too large, odd shaped, odd size sort of off-spec products that we're leaving in the ground or leaving in the field or actually dumping, throwing out into compost or trash that we could bring to customers. And so really starting there to say, why are grocery standards so high? And what if we actually dismantled this concept of perfection and built a marketplace for things that are too small and too big and, you know, odd shaped in sizes, because we don't need to all be perfect. And so we started there in 2015 at the farm, and now fast forward to 2021 and we're Imperfect Foods. So we not only sell fruits and vegetables, but also snacks, proteins, dairy, you know, your entire grocery assortment. I'm staring at my desk right now, looking at our blemished almonds that are my snack right now. And so we sell, you know, a full assortment and really working to find ways that we can reduce food waste and really eliminate this farm level or supply chain level food waste that's occurring and bring it right to customers' doors through weekly subscriptions.
So for those who may be unfamiliar, you know, with, because I think imperfect produce, you know, transitioning to imperfect foods, you were saying that there are all of these different products now. So what kind of products and how are they categorized that make something imperfect?
Yeah. So it's everything from, you know, the almonds that I'm staring at are a little scarred or blemished, and those wouldn't make it through the grading system. We have everything from, you know, oranges that might have scars, or, you know, pears that may be a little too small for regular consumption. So small, large, a little blemished. We also have things like broken items. So my favorite are the dark chocolate pretzel pieces. And so typically you get a bag of pretzels and they're sort of perfect pretzel shaped, but in the process, a lot break. And so we buy all of the broken pieces, cover them in dark chocolate, and sell dark chocolate covered pretzel pieces. So a lot of it is sort of learning and understanding what is the supply chain of food and how can we sort of grab up these broken or blemished or wrong sized or shaped items and bring them to customers. So it started with just fruits and veggies, and we still hold that so core to our values and our truth, and work with, you know, hundreds of growers every week to bring fruits and veggies to our customers. But we also have, you know, broken pretzel bits, off-cut salmon cuts, as well as, you know, a whole assortment of other items as well. So your full shop.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about success, because with food insecurity is such a major issue nationally and, of course, globally. I think it'd be really inspiring to go through some success stories. You know, I was reading your social impact report and a lot about the charitable work. How do you guys measure the environmental and social ROI of imperfect foods?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this, because it, you know, it's something that when we start with a really simple mission of eliminating food waste, and what we've expanded our mission to be from day one is eliminate food waste and build a better food system for everyone. It's because we found that if we can eliminate food waste, we actually have all of these other outcomes that are incredible. So when we are able to buy food from a grower who didn't have a marketplace for it, whether, you know, the sizing was wrong, the spec was wrong, it wasn't accepted in, we can buy that from them. We pay our farmers for our food. And so we're enabling them to value their entire supply chain, pay their folks, which is incredible. So we're helping our growers, but then we're also bringing it to customers. So starting with that purchase, if we can save food from waste or any sort of lesser outcome, we're saving the environmental degradation or the negative impact of not using those resources to their fullest extent. So all of the ways that we can save food, we're actually avoiding carbon emissions as well as water savings that went into growing that food. So the environmental impact is one of our biggest and most important keys. So we measure every pound of food that we're able to save, and then the avoided carbon emissions, as well as the water saved from that. So that's our core environmental key to the start. And so it starts there. And then we work to feed people, right? So because we have this D2C model or direct to consumer, we can deliver to tons of areas and tons of zip codes and counties that maybe don't have access to fresh food. So because we don't require you to come to us and we can come right to you, we make sure that we're very accessible to everyone, no matter what your zip code is or whatever brick and mortar store you might have available. So making sure that fresh food and nutritious food is available is really key to our direct-to-consumer model that our drivers make possible. And then to think about, because we're also an e-commerce business or not physical or brick and mortar, we want to make sure that we're also part of the community, because most times our, you know, the community doesn't realize we're there because we're not a typical grocery store that has doors open and a big sign. We, you know, operate warehouses where food's coming in. We employ, you know, hundreds and thousands of people, but the community doesn't know. So what we do is we partner with nonprofits in our communities who are real experts at food access and food security. So, you know, over 78 partners in last year that we worked with to ensure that we could donate millions of pounds. There's 3.6 million pounds of food that we were able to donate to these 78 folks who are really key core assets in the community to make sure that we're creating food security in our backyard, right? In the communities we work in, that we employ our folks in, we're partnering with these nonprofits who do incredible work, you know, whether they're standing up sort of markets every week or their actual soup kitchens cooking food every week. They're, you know, staples in the community, and they often don't have fresh food. They have a lot more staples or pantry shelf stable items. And so getting our donations of fresh fruits and veggies every week really makes all the difference to them. And that goes back to, we can save more food from our growers and provide them more value, and we can provide better outcomes for our communities by this donation in our backyard. So it's sort of a win-win there, that we're able to save more food, which has positive environmental outcomes, help our grower network, and actually donate and partner in our communities for better food access and food security.
I love hearing about that win-win situation, especially because this last, you know, almost 2 years has been so tough on everybody, especially those that don't have access to fresh food. Everyone on this season of the show, you lucky guys are being asked this question. And I do find it very fascinating. If you go back and listen to any of the episodes that we've done so far in 2021, everybody has a different answer, but we need to talk about the pandemic. You know, how did imperfect foods adapt and pivot? And how do you think the issue of food waste has changed during the pandemic? Were there impacts along your supply chain?
Yeah, and I think to what you even just said of, you can't avoid talking about it. If we think back to when the pandemic first hit in, you know, March of 2020, it was one of the first times that publicly the news cycle really sort of illuminated the three real big problems, which was, one, shelves were empty. You know, there was, if we think back to people hoarding food or being scared, and there was scarcity, as well as there was articles and sort of headlines and news stories of so many growers and producers not having outlets for their food. There was, you know, fields of zucchinis on the headlines, you know, photos of fields of zucchini getting left behind or milk getting dumped. And we had skyrocketing, like never before seen, levels of food insecurity. So we had lines around food banks, more and more people applying for SNAP or food stamps, EBT cards. And it was these three prongs, or these three sort of massive headlines, that made us realize, like, you know, our supply chain is broken and we are not as flexible as we need to be. And we're leaving people behind, whether it's the growers or the consumers. People aren't able to get food out the door and they're not able to get food in the door. And it made us more acutely aware of how important imperfect foods is within this equation of how can we create flexibility and save more food and get that to people. So it was everything from, for us, it was pivoting how we operate, but also sort of welcoming in all of the excess food that we were able to rescue. So it was, you know, 250,000 pounds of fish fillets from a cruise ship, because we know cruise ships were docked, but, you know, fishermen had already caught this fish. And so we were able to take that in. It was, you know, over 12,000 pounds of salami that was actually intended for hotels and restaurants, you know, and 258,000 pounds of popcorn from movie theaters. Because as we all know, we weren't going to the movies, but that popcorn was available. So we sold it in sort of retail bags for customers. And, you know, something like 30,000 snack trays from JetBlue as well, sort of like cheese snack trays. And so it was these items that really were pivotal to saving food and making sure that the supply chain didn't let these go to waste, and using imperfect as an outlet to rescue food, but then also deliver it to customers and folks that were in need. So to answer your question, which was, how did we pivot? It was, you know, making sure that we were an accessible partner for all of the growers and producers who were left without, you know, end markets, and then also, you know, bolstering up and ensuring that we could deliver to all of our customers, because we were quickly and acutely aware that food is an essential service, and getting food delivered became more and more common and more necessary through the pandemic. And, you know, happy to be there for both our customers and all of our farmers.
So, you know, we think about the last couple of years, and, you know, we've seen change, and it's been unexpected, unlike we've ever seen before. So I really can't ask this question in good faith, but in a perfect world, where do you see imperfect foods in 10 years? Where do you see the impact of imperfect foods going?
Yeah, perfectly imperfect. In 10 years, I really hope our plan and our goal of where we're going towards is, in 10 years, by 2030. So I'm curbing it a little bit, but 2030, I'm hoping to save over 1 billion pounds of food. So continuing on to rescue food that would go to lesser outcomes. We're redesigning our operations so that by 2030, we're a net zero carbon operation. And we want to see more and more of our packaging that we're delivering to customers be recycled or even reused. So focusing on saving food, fixing our operations and our commitment to our environment so that we can ensure that we have a food system to keep going towards, and sort of reusing more and more of our packaging that we're using to deliver.
Before we hop into our rapid fire game, and I ask this to a lot of our guests, and I feel like, A, as the head of sustainability for a major corporation, you would have a good answer for this. But B, just as, you know, on a very relatable level and somebody who's passionate about sustainability, I wanted to know, what advice would you give our listeners who are, you know, young adults like myself who are trying to live more sustainably but may not know where to start? What are some easy things that we can do to reduce food waste in our own homes and our own communities?
I love this question. I think the first easy one is support brands that you respect and admire and I think are doing the right thing. We get to shop with our dollars, and you know, me and Danny from Who Gives a Crap often talk about this. Who Gives a Crap is great toilet paper, by the way, if you don't know.
My favorite.
And we often talk about, like, how can we support people in encouraging and voting with their dollars to support brands that are becoming more transparent and doing the right thing, because that's sort of one way that you have a direct action to vote and to sort of advise others to support companies, brands that are pushing the needle and raising the bar. So that's one way to make sure that you feel like you have an impact. Second, on like, how do you reduce food waste at home? It's such an important thing. Shop with a plan is a good one. So make sure that you know what you're going to use everything for, and don't overbuy. And my personal favorite is use your freezer. I have a big box or bag in my freezer of all the scraps that I turn into stock. So that's everything from the tops of my leeks or carrot tops or sort of herb stems are a good favorite too, because it gives good flavor and kick. And you can keep them in your freezer until you're ready. So use your freezer. If there's something you're not going to be able to eat in time to keep it fresh, just freeze it. And so sort of doing inventory is a key piece of my weekly shopping, is doing inventory of what I need, but also doing inventory of what's not going to make it and what can I put in the freezer for later.
You know, you brought up at the beginning of your answer about, you know, voting with our dollar and supporting brands. And that's literally, I mean, the thesis of this whole show was, you know, young adults and millennials and Gen Z, but however you want to categorize us, like myself, are maybe not going to do the old school hippie stuff that when you think of sustainability, I'm not going to chain myself to a tree. I'm not going to, you know, only eat fruit and things like that. That I have like a crazy cousin in California who, you know, thinks that sustainability is growing up to like here and wearing Birkenstocks. But I'm a firm believer in being a conscious consumer and using my purchasing power. So I love that you know, kind of aligned with us on that. And before we wrap up, I did want to play our rapid fire game with you. It's not as intense as it sounds, but I'm just going to fire off 10 quick questions and you answer the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
What does your morning routine look like?
Turning off my alarm and going to make coffee as quickly as possible.
What is one item you don't leave the house without?
My keys and a water bottle, reusable water bottle.
Who's the last person that you texted?
My mom.
What is one lesson that you learned over the last 16 months during the height of the pandemic?
Oh, people matter. Call your family, text your best friend, call your first grade teacher that you're still thinking about who changed your life, because people are the most important thing.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
Ooh, Avril Lavigne. No shame there.
I've never had that answer in three seasons.
I'm glad I could be the first, and I hope I encourage others to come out of their shell as well.
I always get, we get a lot of like Dave Matthews, Red Hot Chili Peppers, not a lot of Avril Lavigne. That's a good one. What's one staple that's always in your fridge or freezer?
Oh, really good butter is a key staple for me.
What was your first job ever?
My first job? Oh my gosh. I think I worked in a clothing store, like a neighborhood clothing store, as a cashier.
What's one piece of advice that somebody gave you throughout your life that really stuck with you?
Oh, that's a great one. Write a thank you note. Be conscientious. Writing thank you notes, it's underrated and a little old school, but it makes all the difference.
What do you like on your pizza?
Oh, I love pizza. I mean, I'm going to flip this. I actually care more about what's under the pizza, which is really good sourdough crust, and hopefully on a wood-fired oven.
I'll take it. And lastly, what does success mean to you?
I mean, I'm pausing here because I think this one has changed for me a lot through the pandemic, as we've all sort of reflected more. So I probably had a quicker answer 2 years ago than I do now. But I think success really now in the current state of the world looks like actually inspiring others to make a difference. I really believe in sort of the ripple effect of sustainability or impactful work of if you can convince three other people that this matters and they go off and do great work on their own, that has a larger impact than just one individual. So educating along the way and making sure you're inspiring others through the process and having conversations so that it's not just success in one way, but success across many people and through a sort of interconnected web.
Maddie, you are a true industry influencer and a huge voice for change in the food waste space. You know, we've had a lot of amazing people on, but I am really leaving here today, I think probably the most inspired that I've ever been, because I can't wait for the listeners to hear about all the amazing work you guys were doing, especially during the pandemic. That's a story that needs to be told. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Amy, thank you for having me and having a fun conversation. I'm really grateful for folks like you who are sort of continuing the conversation on. So thank you.